Good morning, this is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, this Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. It'll be Chapter 11 in Mosaic 1, where we are going to complete our discussion of phosphatic acid phosphatase, at least in association with this complex Nature paper published in 2019, dealing ultimately, as we will see, with pancreatic ductal carcinoma. So I'm going to just jump right back into this. I'm going to have to do a little bit of retro discussion so that you get the full picture of some of the, I believe, misconceptions that are in this paper. Now, the results in this paper show that mTORC appears to modulate phosphatidyl ethanol amine levels in the mitochondria. And the argument is that when they inhibit mTORC, it activates lipin 1. Now, this is where there's a lot of problem with that particular statement, because mTORC 1 is a kinase. You inhibit it, you're going to inhibit phosphorylation. Inhibit phosphorylation of what? Substrate proteins, because it's a protein kinase. Actually, it's a serine threonine kinase, okay? Just to be specific. But when it phosphorylates lipin 1, it doesn't really knock out the phosphatase activity. Very complex what happens, because there are some 17 to 19 canonical hierarchical phosphorylation sites on the enzyme phosphatidic acid phosphatase. And this has been well studied going way back at least 10 years before this 2019 paper was published, showing that that level of phosphorylation of the phosphatidic acid phosphatase regulates not its activity, but its movement within subcellular compartments. Okay, and that makes good sense, because you're adding an electrostatic charge to the protein, especially if you're adding that much more phosphoanhydride phosphate to each of those residues. Okay. So that's important. A paper published in Cell back in 2011 wanted to examine that exact translocation of the protein known as lipin 1, which is the phosphatidic acid phosphatase, as you know. So mTORC1 is a protein kinase, as I just said, and it's got, and it will, is capable of phosphorylating a total of 19 phosphorylation sites. So this paper, some 13 years ago, was looking at, they were using mass spec, and they were specifically looking at each of those sites. Now, even more detailed, when a serine or threonine is phosphorylated by mTORC1 on lipin 1, those phosphorylations are proline directed, because the serine threonine, which can become phosphorylated, is going to be immediately proximal to a proline residue. So proline directs the substrate specificity for the phosphorylation by mTORC1. So they raised antibodies to various proline-directed sites, and then they looked for phospho products of each of those sites on lipin 1. They also did a complete level of mutation, citrate mutagenesis, on 17 of those 19 potential phosphorylation sites on lipin 1. And what they did is they converted a serine to an alanine, a serine or a threonine to an alanine, which cannot be phosphorylated. Okay. So this is a really well done paper done back in Cell in 2011. The other thing they looked at is rapamycin versus taurin 1. Rapamycin inhibits mTORC1, right? It gets its name from that particular activity, from the antibiotic, but the more modern inhibitor of mTORC1 is called taurin 1. So rapamycin mostly inhibits, while taurin-1 completely inhibits phosphorylation of, for example, serine 106. Serine 106 on lipin 1 is very similar to how those two inhibitors work on the translation factors, which are often phosphorylated by mTORC1 as well. Same substrate specificity, it's just different protein. Now, the serine 472 lipin 1 phosphorylation, like the threonine phosphorylation on the 4EBP1 protein involved in translation, was insensitive to rapamycin but totally sensitive to taurin-1. So depending on which of the inhibitors of mTORC1 they used, you're going to get a distinct differential alteration of phosphorylation sites on lipin 1. They did not cover that at all in the 2019 paper. Okay, so think about that. Put that in your first level of being concerned about exactly what the final readout is on this paper, this Nature paper. Now, wild-type lipin 1 can be highly phosphorylated by mTORC. So mTORC is a bona fide lipin 1 kinase. Mutations of all 17 that were studied of those serine threonine to alanines was sufficient to promote full nuclear association of lipin 1 in this 2011 paper in Cell. So what they were studying was the phosphatic acid phosphatase unphosphorylated moves to the nucleus and is associated with sterile response element binding protein binding to the SRE regulating cholesterologenesis in the nucleus, okay, that transcription factor complex. So you understand. And so this is amazing because in the Nature paper says the inhibition of mTORC1 activates lipin 1, no phosphorylation. And it said because of that decreases PA levels, okay? So activates means no phosphorylation, and therefore it's going to decrease PA levels because you're going to make diacylglycerol. Because they say the mitochondrial localized phosphatase converts PA to DAG. So there's a contradiction here. One paper says the enzyme lipin 1 is going to be in the nucleus, where the other paper says it's absolutely found in the nucleus, particularly if it's dephosphorylated. And then active, then of course altering, according to them, not only the product formation diacylglycerol, but also somehow phosphatidylethanolamine is being corrupted by the enzyme making DAG. Now, again, if you know your phospholipid biosynthesis pathways, you know that's really not supported by our understanding of the pathway. Because phosphatidic acid synthesizing DAG from the lipin 1 reaction, DAG will be used as a co-substrate for the ethanolamine phosphotransferase reaction with CDP ethanolamine, making PE. Okay, so the nucleotide pathway actually requires the activity of lipin 1. Why then would lipin 1 activity being fully active, not phosphorylated because of the inhibition of mTOR, right? Remember that whole, and then the whole association with hypoxia and HIF-1 alpha and the protease activity being elevated during the decrease in oxygen tensions. All of that, remember, was all discussed, right? Well, it makes no sense because PE levels shouldn't change because this pathway for PE synthesis requires DAG. Now there is the other pathway, and that's decarboxylase. So you do have phosphatidylserine decarboxylase, but that's only one other route. You also have the third route, right? The polar head group exchange reactions, which are known to occur in membranes, particularly in the mitochondrial membranes, should be totally unaffected by the production of diacylglycerol. You see? This is not even involved in the process, and neither is phosphatidic acid. For example, PC is involved, or PS is involved. Okay. All right. So there's a lot of issue there that if you know your lipid metabolism, but not just lipid metabolism, you have to know subcellular localization of polypeptides and what happens when a protein is phosphorylated. The phosphorylation of a protein does not mean that it's going to be inactivated or activated because of its association with its active site. Phosphorylation of a protein changes its electronegativity because of all the addition of phosphate. That alone will change its miscibility in membranes, making it much less miscible in an inner mitochondrial membrane because of all of that charge density of all the phosphate. So dephospho enzyme would be the only one you would expect to find in the inner mitochondrial membrane. That would be unrelated then to mTORC unless mTORC was phosphorylating in the cytoplasm where the mTORC does find, is obtained. You don't find mTORC anywhere inside of mitochondria. You may find it in the nucleus. You certainly find it associated with ribosomes because it's involved in translation. Okay? So, all of that now it's in the nucleus because it's involved in transcriptional control, and it's in the cytoplasm associated with polyribosomes. There also is some argument for mTORC activity associated with the ER, but that's not something that is part of this discussion. But anywhere where your microprotein synthesis might be mTORC activity is what I'm saying. So the point I'm trying to make here is that the relative association with all this kinase activity by mTORC and its link up to phosphatidic acid metabolism because of the lipin 1, the arguments for how that's functioning in this system, in this particular publication, have not taken into account canonical lipid metabolism, canonical lipid and protein transport into subcellular organelles, or the vast consideration of simple biochemical and biophysical properties of proteins that become phosphorylated or dephosphorylated. And that's the other component. There are phosphatases, which will remove phosphate from preformed proteins. Obviously, these are called protein phosphatases. And they're as common as RNase enzymes in the cytoplasm, and also they're found in membranes. Their membranes are enriched by phosphatases and kinases, as you might know. Okay? So those are some caveats I want you to understand. So rapamycin lacks an effect on lipin 1 phosphatidic acid phosphatase activity. Okay? So that is a key feature. Not only rapamycin's effect on mTORC, but also taurin 1. So this is a really important issue. Now, the other thing they were discussing, yes, that we were discussing in lecture, was this whole mobilization of the CTP phosphoinositidyl transferase, alpha isoform. Now, that protein is typically considered a nuclear enzyme. And it is involved in essentially a rate-limiting step for PC synthesis de novo in only the nucleotide pathway because it generates CDP choline. And what does CDP choline have to react with to make PC? Diacylglycerol. So diacylglycerol could be generated by phospholipase C or by phosphatidic acid phosphatase. See that there's a total, and also triacylglycerol lipase. Now think about it. Multiple ways for these lipids to be reconverted and interconverted. Not discussed at all in this paper that we've been discussing. Okay, even though the conclusions are based on very narrow understanding of lipid metabolism and indeed even protein translocation mechanisms, okay? So in fact, CCT alpha is known to go to the nuclear envelope. And what it does there is it makes this nucleoplasmic reticulum. And I was talking about that before. And it's involved in CCT alpha can bind to lamins, which are in the nuclear envelope. And that's also going to be regulating PC synthesis. There's a whole reason for this, which I'm not going to be able to get into. Maybe I'll make a whole mosaic out of it someday. But I'll leave you with just with that reminder, okay? So the final thing on this paper, they're talking about pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. And they're saying that they are hypoxic, nutrient-deprived tumors. And they adapt via, they adapt meaning the tumor grows well, under a switch of bioenergetic fuel to glutamine. We went through the whole glutaminolysis story several lectures ago. So they investigated, remember I'm going back and finishing this whole paper, why this particular protease has a terrible name, YEME1L, but why or how or whether a stimulated protease-dependent effect occurs in human PDACs, okay? So they looked at six biopsy samples from six patients, okay? And they were looking at tumors that these people had PDAC. And five out of the six tumors contained stabilized HIF-1 alpha, okay? So stabilized, that means that hypoxia-inducible factor 1 alpha, that transcription factor is stabilized. Remember, it turns over rapidly, remember that, via phosphorylation itself. And remember the whole way it's also turned over the system using alpha-ketoglutarate, and that comes from glutaminolysis, and we discussed this many times. And then the 2-HG derivative, the oncometabolite. Remember all that. Put that all into your frontal memory case now because it's necessary to finish this. So it stabilizes HIF-1 alpha. So that means it inhibits its elimination because it's hypoxic, you see. So transcription factors will then sequence a series of events, which will then generate transcripts that are associated with transcription under hypoxic conditions because of HIF-1 alpha. And also, they say five of those six individual tumors, they saw that these YME1L substrates were reduced in tumors compared to adjacent non-tumor tissue. So that means high level of proteolysis during hypoxia. That is canonical understanding of proteolytic degradation. Now, I want to remind you, ductal cells of the pancreas form the epithelial lining of what are known as the branch tubes, and they deliver enzymes produced by the pancreatic acinar cells into the duodenum. That's the function, okay? So in addition, these ductal cells secrete bicarbonate, and that's one of the ways of neutralizing acidity, obviously. This is all during digestion. So that's the exocrine activity of the pancreas, not the endocrine, you see? Now, the oxygen gradient within the liver acinus is a regulator of zonation. What kind of zonation? Molecular zonation and oxygenic zonation, because they were comparing this to hepatic tumors, the pancreatic tumors. So the hepatic acinus is the functional unit of the liver. Told you about the ductal system. Now let's go to the liver. The acinus it under microscopy is sometimes hidden because of the lobule, but it's necessary to understand its function in normal hepatic activity because it's linkage to the vascular system. And so the acinus has finally been resolved. You get ellipsoidal mass of hepatocytes aligned around the hepatic arterioles and the portal venules, just as they start to anastomose into the sinusoids of the liver tissue. So the acinus is roughly divided into zones that correspond to distance from the arterial blood supply. Parasites closest to the arterioles, that would be zone 1, are the Bex oxygenated, and those farther from the arterioles are the ones with lesser and lesser amounts of molecular oxygen. The net result, then, there's a variety of pathological processes that lead to lesions, some of which can be, of course, simply just necrotic lesions because of this acinar structure. But also when you think about a hepatocellular carcinoma and the amount of oxygen entering. So the analysis of hepatocellular carcinoma tumor samples taken from 6 individuals did not reveal HIF-1 alpha stabilization or reduced levels of that YME1L substrate population, which means that protease wasn't functioning. But the liver, as I just mentioned to you, is profoundly more vascularized. So there's more molecular oxygen, and it's much higher, even in hepatocellular carcinoma, as opposed to PDAC. So that's a straight clinical aspect that was not covered very well. Plus, PDAC involves a distinct cell lineage, remember, ductal versus hepatocellular in the liver. So the YME1L-mediated proteolysis downstream of stabilization of HIF-1 alpha could support tumor development in the PDAC. You see? And it may not have any kind of function like that in the liver. So comparing them is difficult at best. Okay? So that's what I'm saying right now. So far, got that. So, and they were comparing them in their paper, right? Now, even though the two cancers and cell involvements differ, the authors of the 2019 paper argue that the lipin-1 YME1L proteolytic axis facilitates PDAC growth, but is what they call dispensable in the hepatocellular carcinoma progression. Well, we might just argue that strictly on the basis of oxygen tensions, you understand? Which is going to change entirely the program of what? Transcription of whatever is being expressed in those tumors. So, just a matter of an anatomical feature. So, let's go on. Depletion of that protease, the YME1L, strongly impairs PDAC tumor growth. Okay, so they get rid of the protease. They see that that's beneficial because it decreases pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma growth. Okay, and that suggested to the authors that this might highlight the protease mediated reshaping of the mitochondrial proteome as a mechanism that supports PDAC development, and now they're trying to identify that protease as a potential pharmaceutical target in PDAC. Okay, that was one of the key features, probably why the paper made it in Nature. Okay, now I will tell you this: I looked at this paper carefully, even though they claim they did lipid analyses, did I guess LC mass spec, because they did get it. Remember the percent decline of phosphatidylethanolamine in the mitochondrial membranes? And they even admitted rather grudgingly, well, there wasn't that big of a decrease, but maybe a small decrease in phosphatidylethanolamine could then regulate the protease. Well, I looked at those papers. There was a very small decrease in the amount of PE, regardless of what was going on with the activity of the protease or with the entire mTORC system they were following by inhibiting it or not. Okay? Plus, they didn't give you any lipid profiles. The lipid profiles were incomplete. So they didn't demonstrate phosphoglycerol lipid species alterations in the various membrane fractions. So if they performed it, they didn't show you the data. So we don't know what's going on with all the different lipids. So wouldn't you have to know the relative concentration of phosphatidic acid, cardiolipin, phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine? Yes, you would. None of this was given in the paper, even though they said they did lipid analyses. It was only doing as a mole percent of PE against all other lipids. Also, remember, diacylglycerol is a precursor to phosphatidylethanolamine biosynthesis. So how could PA activity altered because not because of inhibiting the phosphatase, by the way, but because inhibiting its translocation perhaps to a location where that could be functional as like a decrease in activity, right? If you sequester the lipin 1 in the cytoplasm and the lipin 1 was supposed to be in the mitochondrial inner membrane, that is like inhibiting the enzyme, but it's not inhibiting the phosphatase. We already went through that. Those canonical phosphorylations don't do that. Now, there is one paper that talked about how phosphorylated lipid 1, okay, because it binds to dianionic phosphatidic acid, that phosphorylation of the protein could corrupt that electrostatically. But then the question would be, how would you have a highly phosphorylated lipin 1 in a membrane? Because if it was loaded with all that phosphate, how would it ever get translocated in that membrane? It would be more like sequestered in the cytoplasm. It wouldn't be functional. And that's the reverse of what they're saying is the result of this whole process. Remember the depletion of PE, right? Also keep in mind that the mTORC1 itself functions as a phosphatidylinositol 3 kinase, AKT mTORC kinase. So you need phosphatidylinositol 3 phosphate. And remember, the phosphatidylinositides are also linked to PA activity. Okay. Likewise, mTORC has not ever been shown to be active in the inner mitochondrial membrane. So you would have to have that lipin 1 phosphorylated not in situ, but back in the cytoplasm, maybe associated with the ribosomes. I don't know. I mean, that's not discussed. Okay. So I'm finished now with that paper, and we spent a lot of time going back and forth into it. But I did it for two reasons. One is to generate the mosaic understanding of looking at how cellular metabolism is far more complex than simply understanding even one given nested set of pathways. And I'll even be so bold as to say even the nested set of phosphoglycerol lipid pathways, because you have to take into account all the mobility, the ample mobility of the proteins involved in that biosynthesis. Remember the ER and the mitochondria, places in the mitochondria, inner outer membrane, etc. ER, inner or inner lumen or outside, whether or not any of these enzymes are in the nucleus, like the cytotransferase. Plus, you need to understand all the levels of regulation involved in the actual solution chemistry of adding phosphate to a protein and where that protein might move to or be mobilized to. And if it's necessary to be in a specific subcellular localization for it to be active as an enzyme in phospholipid metabolism, for example. The same argument can be made for the proteases. Right? Proteases have, and they tried to argue that that protease was moved closer to its substrates because of the small decrease in PE, but they didn't demonstrate that, okay? They would need to do a biophysical, they would need to get a paper published in JLR, a Journal of Lipid Research, and have to do a real careful study of the movement of these different ionic lipids within membranes, determine whether or not that particular protease was either moved closer to its substrates or not. And I didn't see that at all in the paper. So I'm not trying to trash this paper. I'm just trying to show you how a great large amount of conclusions are made from doing a lot of careful studies, a very well done paper. But those conclusions can be wrong if there is a deficit in the knowledge base of what developed the hypothetical deductions to generate the experimental design to carry out the experiments, or even at the same level, what the results mean when they're finally all put together. Okay. And plus, you can see that from me going back and looking at these earlier papers in JBC and Cell and BBA and whatnot, those papers were all prior to this paper, 2019 paper. Doesn't look like they knew anything about that whole canonical phosphorylation pattern for the protein they're arguing is related to PDAC, right? And then indirectly, then they're targeting not that, by the way, which is interesting, but the protease. Dr. Dan Guerra, February 2024, Authentic Biochemistry, saying bye for now.